All right, today I'm joined by LA casting director Jamie Beebe. Oh, with her Abbey Road Studios mug for the UK viewers. Just noticed that now. Very nice plug to the Beatles. Thank you for joining me. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I just got back from London, so.
Oh, really?
I did, yeah. I finally made it to London for the first time. I loved it.
Was it your first trip over? Never been before?
Right, not to London. I've been to Europe and UK, and like I've been other places, but just I never made it to London.
Oh, amazing. How'd you find it? Because it's weird, like there's not that many tourists, so it's a very different it's a very different feeling, London, I think, is what I'm trying to say, because I was there a few weeks ago and it's kind of fast paced, but half the tourists are gone. So what was your take?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting. The people are interesting. Like everyone's actually super nice, but like with kind of like an edge.
Okay. A pandemic will do that to you, I think, to be fair.
That too. I loved it though. The drinks were great. Everyone was awesome. I got to see the Palace and Abbey Road Studios and tons of other random stuff. Big Ben, the Eye.
Amazing. Some theater? Did you get some theater in?
I didn't. I was actually working. So
okay.
I just spend some of the time working.
That's forgiven for work reasons. Well, that kind of leads quite nicely into, I guess, the first part, because obviously it's been a crazy couple of years. Obviously, people's work has been affected across all industries. Ours is no different. But that's pretty cool that you've not only had work recently, but you've traveled internationally for that. So how has it been for you, I guess, more recently with work? And then what was it like for you in the sort of core pandemic stage, and how did you sort of navigate it?
Yeah, I mean, more recently, I think everything is kind of coming back to normal for me. I'm actually busier than I was before. It's different though. You know, I'm doing all self-tapes. I haven't done an in-person audition in like years now, which is great. I prefer that.
Okay.
I prefer self-tapes. Because it's a better use of time. You know, you don't have to get in the car and drive anywhere, and at least not for like the first round of tapes anyway. During the pandemic, yeah, I mean, all filming stopped for a little while in LA. So I started a podcast during that time, which actually went really well. And I'm still working on that. But I thought it was interesting when everything kind of shut down, the stuff that was going on social media. I mean, a lot of people got really creative and they started, you know, posting random monologues and like posting this and that, which was great because I was also bored and I was watching those things and I discovered so many new actors that I wouldn't have discovered otherwise. I wouldn't have had time to just look through endless hours of Instagram and TikTok and everything. But I think that, you know, I think that the pandemic just kind of recalibrated everything. I think a lot of people either pushed forward quite a bit and stuck with what they were doing, or they left the industry, you know, and went for something else. Because it was a lot of downtime that it was tough. You know, the pandemic was tough on a lot of people. I took it really well. I'm kind of, I like to stay home, which is weird. I know, because I'm either... Everyone laughs at me because I'm either traveling or I'm at home. Like I don't really need to hang out with people.
So it's like, it's one extreme or the other then basically.
Yeah. Well, I travel solo a lot too. So that kind of weirds people out.
Really?
Oh yeah.
I guess a lot of people expect that people travel sort of as a couple or with friends, but then if you travel alone, you see things in a different way. Like you don't have to make plans with anybody else. You can kind of just go off whenever you want to go off.
Yeah. And right before pandemic, I was lucky enough to become single from a terrible person.
Choice of words. Well, okay, fair enough. If it's a terrible person, lucky.
Oh Lord, he was. But yeah, so I was lucky enough to become single right before the pandemic. And I think that helped me get through the pandemic as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of people went the other way and kind of hunkered down with people in the pandemic out of necessity or feeling like they needed some companionship, and then regretted it now later on when it's like,
I've seen that. I've seen a lot of regret on among my friends and babies. There's a lot of babies, regret, marriages. And now we're getting into divorces and breakups.
Interesting. Just that full cycle, but it's happening within the space of a year as opposed to over a few decades.
Yeah.
Amazing. This has turned into like a relationship podcast all of a sudden.
I suck at relationships. I can't even date correctly anymore. So
that could be a good podcast, to be fair. There's one for your production company. So in terms of your kind of, I guess, hero's journey, start getting into casting. I know you did production stuff first. I think that was something you kind of dabbled in, and you still produce your own stuff now. You mentioned the podcast. Maybe if you can, for the people tuning in, just give like a little Cliff Notes version of, you know, your background, what's kind of led you to where you are now, and the kind of stuff that you're drawn to creatively.
Sure. My life in 30 seconds.
There you go. Because, you know, that's what it all condenses down to.
Yeah. No, I randomly ended up in production. I grew up in a small town in Iowa. So I would watch TV and have zero idea that there were so many people behind the scenes or like anything. I mean, I just didn't like think about things like that when I was a kid. And then, you know, eventually I got my bachelor's, my master's degree, made my way out to Los Angeles, still with like no idea what I really wanted to do. And ended up in production. I ended up managing like a little boutique production company, and we made a bunch of commercials and, you know, little things like that. It was fun, but like, I was managing myself because like there wasn't anyone else really working there. I was doing kind of all the jobs and, you know, hiring people for when we had something going on. So I learned every part of production, which is crazy because I'd never even been on a set before. But once I learned it, and that production company kind of folded, I decided that casting was like the easiest, like it was the easiest for me because, it's just knowing people, it's getting to know people. It's reading people. It's, relationships in the industry, you know, is an agent going to answer your call, that kind of thing. So, I decided that I was going to be a casting director, which I thought would be, you know, like who wouldn't hire me, obviously. but it turns out like most people didn't want to hire me because I really didn't have that much experience. So I would go to the schools and I would stand outside the schools and like ask people if they would hire me for like their school projects to cast their school projects. And they started hiring me, which is great. And then, you know, they started graduating and they kept hiring me and then kind of word of mouth. And that's really how I started with the casting, which is crazy because, you know, most people work under somebody and they work for a company. And I just didn't want to do that. So I just kind of learned as I went and it worked out.
It's a pretty entrepreneurial kind of DIY approach to it. Like, is that something you feel has always been part of your DNA, or did you have to cultivate that a little bit as time went on?
No, I've always kind of been like, I always do things outside of the box and, okay, you know, a little different. I'm a little different, you know, from what should normally be done, I'm sure. You know, like even just, you know, as a girl traveling solo, like I've been all through South America and, you know, the southern half of the world solo. And it's an interesting, different thing. And a lot of people wouldn't do that. So I feel like I don't really follow the same path as other people most of the time.
But yes, still you're kind of carving out experiences and making your way in, you know, in this case, in the industry and doing your thing. So it's interesting because it just shows that there is like a traditional linear, well, not a linear path, but a traditional path. But there's other ways, I guess, to sort of navigate and be part of the industry. And I think probably now more than ever, that's even more telling because people have to be more creative. They have to think of different ways from an actor's perspective. I think if you rely on the phone to ring for an audition and hope for the booking to come, you could be waiting for decades. So I just thought it was interesting because that spirit that you seem to have had feels like it's more and more prevalent for people in industry now more than ever. I don't know if you agree.
I do. I mean, I think so, especially, you know, with the pandemic and coming back from that, you know, things changed during the pandemic, like people changed. I mean, even for me, like a lot of agents left the companies or started a different company or, you know, whatever it might be. And there was a big turnaround in the industry. A lot of actors left their agents and managers and or got different ones. And so coming back from it was a lot. And I think that the people that are going to persevere, like they're the ones that need to think outside the box at this point and be able to do the changes. You know, it's unfortunate. I've talked to a lot of actors that just have such a hard time doing self-tapes. You know, they don't, it's hard for them. They don't understand it. It's hard to figure out all the technical things. And I get it,
yeah.
But you know, you have to embrace the change if you're going to stick around.
Is it the technical side that's the big kind of stickler for people, or is it like not getting direction like you get in a room, or is it a combo? What's the main stuff that's coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a combo. You know, a lot of people want that one-on-one interaction. They need it, you know, for to be able to act to the fullest. And I totally understand that. And I do agree with that to a big point. But since this is how it is at this point, you know, you just have to kind of go with it or come up with your own new way of doing self-tapes or of you know, dealing with that. But just saying no to it is going to say no to anything that you want to do in the industry.
How do you think, I mean, because obviously some people are more tech savvy than others. And then for others, it's like, wait, I've got to get cameras and lighting and have a backdrop that works and get a reader that's not, you know, going to be like too vocal, but still not seem like they're in a different world. So that just gets you potentially out of your head of just focusing on what's my performance going to be. It's two different sort of energies. What tips do you have for actors, whether they're struggling with that or not, just to distinguish between the two?
I mean, I think that normally, and I think this can kind of go for anything in life, you need to just learn to problem solve, like figure it out. Like, it, you know, sometimes I send out self-tape requests. I'll get emails back from actors. And normally I work with agents and managers, but sometimes if I'm doing, because I still do, you know, stuff for the schools and, you know, so I'll work one-on-one with actors and getting self-tapes from them. But I'll get an email back from an actor who'll be like, I don't have a reader. Like, I don't have anyone to come here. I don't know what to do. I mean, there's so many options. Call your mom, put her on speaker, have her read the lines. I mean, there's so many ways to do it. Or, you know, put someone on Zoom with you and have them read, like, record the lines, play them back to you. I mean, just problem solve it. Like, it's not, you know, everything can be fixed, changed, dealt with, you know. And I think that a lot of times people get wrapped up in like, oh no, what am I going to do? Instead of thinking, okay, cool. Like, what am I going to do? I think it's the same way with acting, you know, don't get wrapped up in your head, like take a breath, sit down, figure it out, you know, and not in a harsh way, but there's so many options, you know, instead of emailing your casting director, like, oh, I don't have a reader. I guess I can't do this. Cause I'm going to say, okay, cool. I guess you can't. Like, that's great. You know? But in all reality, I normally I'll respond back and I'll let them know 10 different options on how to find a reader that's not in the room with you, a reader that's not real. I mean, you know, it's not that hard.
Well, especially in the pandemic, like tools that were already there kind of got more exposure, and things like We Audition and other things like that, that kind of cropped up where you can get a reader no matter where in the world you are. And it's, I guess it wasn't maybe as accepted before to have someone zooming in. Whereas now it's like, well, you know, it doesn't make a difference.
Well, yeah. And that's true too. And then also, you know, since we're not doing it in the room and things like that, if you look at it in a positive light, like you can retape your read 25 times and pick the best one and send it in. I mean, sure. Congrats. Like you have time to, now you have time to memorize it. You can do it in a better way. And, you know, really portray yourself in the way that you want people to see you. You know, the joy of editing, all of that. Sure. And then on top of that, like you don't need a great camera. I mean, use your phone. Like it's not, you know, it's not rocket. And we know this, like, we're not like looking for like the depth of field and the way that it's all set up. I mean, we get it. On the other hand, the people sometimes that are a little bit more creative with it, it's interesting. It's going to grab my attention. Like if you've got, you know, if you're using a prop, if you're, you know, using this and you're talking, there's no coffee in the lines, of course, but you're talking with the coffee. It's just going to grab the attention a little bit, like just kind of give it the extra, like, think about it. If you're, trying to do a role as a businessman, like just wear a suit, you know? And if you don't have one, like, it's not the end of the world, but like I would put something on or add something extra to it just to grab that 1 second of attention, because we watch self-tapes very, very quickly. And I watch for such a finite amount of time, and I can tell immediately if the person like is believable, or, you know, if it's what I'm looking for, if they look how I thought they would look on camera. And so honestly, if there's any little extra thing in there, it's going to grab my attention 1 second longer, and maybe that'll make a difference. I don't know.
As long as it relates to what the story is and the narrative, right? Like drinking a cup of coffee during a Jurassic Park scene where you're going to get killed by a velociraptor, probably not so much, but
exactly.
I think it's important to caveat, because sometimes we can get notes and then some actors might think, cool, props, just in everything. And it doesn't boil down to that.
Very minimal.
Sure.
Very, very minimal things. Yeah.
And so you mentioned, obviously, like, you watch loads of these and your time is finite. And obviously, you kind of probably know, as you said, within a few seconds, yes, no, maybe, keep watching. If you get a tape and you don't feel like it's resonating, for whatever reason, it might just be, oh, maybe they weren't the right fit for that role. It happens. Do you keep watching all the way through to the end? Do you normally sort of see if it develops? Do you just kind of go, not right for this, maybe there's something else? What's your normal approach?
It's different every time with every actor. Because I'm usually casting anywhere between 3 and 10 different projects at a time. So like you said, like this person might not be right for something I thought they would be, but I also have in my mind the other 10 projects I'm casting. So mm-hmm. I might continue watching because they might be perfect for something else. And then I'll reach out, I'll move them over, I'll get a new self tape, I'll do whatever it needs to take. One of my biggest like pet peeves for me personally is when I view a tape and then I look at their photos, and I'm like, is this even the same person? Like, don't filter your photos. We're not Instagram. You know? Like, just, I just want, it's just, it's so hard to, when I'm going through it and I'm choosing people based on so many different degrees, but one of them, many times, not all the times, is like the way that you look. So if you lost 30 pounds, gained 20 pounds, changed your hair color, you know, if you have a scar on your face, like, I just need to know like what people actually look like, because when you go on for video, like, I'm going to know what you look like. So like the photos like only got you here, and I'm going to watch 2 seconds of it and be done, because you don't look anything like I thought. And it's not all the time, because, you know, many times it's not based on looks. Although if I'm looking for somebody who's 30 and you look 60 in your video, but you look 30, like, that's a waste of my time. Like that kind of stuff. I forgot the question, but cut off on a tangent.
Me too, but it can't have been that good. No, but okay. I think it was more about, do you if you feel like you've watched the reel and you're not sure, do you keep watching? And I guess it does vary.
It varies. It depends on the project too. Some projects, my clients want to see a million self tapes, which I always try to tell them that that's not the way that I like to pick and choose a very finite amount of tapes to watch. And I only request tapes from people that I truly think will fit what I'm looking for. But sometimes, especially commercials, we open it up. Sure. So it's a very, you know, like, maybe I want someone 25, maybe I want someone 45. We don't know, you know, that kind of thing. So if I'm watching only like 7 tapes that I've personally requested, then I'm going to watch them all the way through. I'm going to watch them 5 or 6 times. Cause that's where, you know, I'm narrowing things down. If it's like, I have 100 tapes to watch, then it's sure. I'm going to go through it quicker. So anyone who grabs my attention, I'll stay. And anyone who doesn't, will go.
Sure. I guess on those like film and TV ones where maybe you don't have as many as on the commercial side, what draws you to bring the person in the first place? Obviously, you've spoken about the obvious headshot. There'll be relationships with agents, managers, past connections. To what degree does the demo reel, I guess, is where I'm going with this, factor into your decision to say, yeah, I want you to self-tape for this, because some footage that you've got seems to maybe align with the breakdown. Like, how important is the demo or some kind of footage for you with that decision?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important. I will say, I love working with the same actors over and over.
Damn you.
I do. Although through the pandemic, that's something that I started changing up quite a bit, because like I said, I was bored and I was watching like monologues from random people that I never would have watched. I probably wouldn't have even seen their tapes. And I took notes and I reached out to a lot of those people when I started casting again. But yeah, I do. I like to work with the same agents and managers. I like to work with the same actors. It's because, you know, when I have an actor that I know can go to set, just push it out, get it, everything done. They're nice on set. They know how to act. They're professional. They show up. There's no complaints. Like my biggest thing, like if I have an actor on set and I get a complaint on that actor, man, like that is tough. That is tough for me to hire you again. And of course it depends like what the situation is, but I so rarely get any complaints on any of my actors because I do work with a lot of the same people or the same agents and managers, because you know, then it's on the agents and managers. Like if their actor is unprofessional and not showing up, it's more on them. It's not on me. But then, you know, we'll all have a talk. Like I'm not afraid to confront people on that level. Like if I hire you to do a professional job, then I need you to do a professional job. The demo reel is extremely important. I need to see what you look like on film. And just kind of like, are you believable? What's your, you know, like the way you speak, the way you carry yourself, the way you stand, the way you, everything. And then it also helps because, you know, that way I can see you on film. You know, I can see what maybe more of what you actually look like. So that always helps. I always watch the demo reel for sure.
When it comes to like the nature of the footage on the reel, because this is always interesting amongst fellow actor friends, like, you know, people are the co-star, maybe getting into guest star level. They've got some scenes on some big known shows, but obviously it's like three lines, four lines. It's not exactly, you know, their best work. What's your take on how to structure the reel? Would you put something from an indie film that's less known, but really solid work up front, and then the more known thing after? Would you lead with the thing that's known with like maybe a named actor? What catches your attention more? What do you think is the better approach?
You know, for me, I don't really care if it's like some like famous thing. I just want to see you in good lighting. I want to see your face. I want to see your body. I want to hear your voice. I want to understand how like your mannerisms. And I've, you know, I work, there's this great kid I work with. I just adore him. He has recently started acting. I know his family. And so I always ask him for self-tapes and stuff so that he can get an idea of, you know, what a self-tape is like. And, you know, otherwise it's hard to maybe get that opportunity. So lo and behold, he starts sending in self-tapes and he's killing it. And he just like got a lead in a feature film. The first feature film he self-taped before, he got a lead. And he's done now a bunch of commercials or anything else. But since he just started acting, he literally just books everything. It's crazy. But since he just started acting, he doesn't have a reel yet. So I told him, like, what, you know, go ahead and like your best self-tapes, like string them together a little bit. Because that way people can see, like, you're so believable when you speak. Your mannerisms are great. You look just like your headshot. Like, there's a lot to do there. So I would say, like, I know so many people are like, oh, I don't have a reel yet. Make one up. Like it's not hard, you know, like stand in front of your camera, do a monologue, do, you know, take a selection of all your self tapes, string something together. Like that goes back to kind of the whole problem solving thing.
But I guess, yeah, like it sounds as though it's more of, in your opinion, go with performance first, right? 100%. Like 100% go with, sure.
I'm going to look at your resume too. Like, I know that you've been a guest star on, you know, Reno 911 or whatever.
That's true. We forget you can read. That's.
Yeah. Like I'm going to look at that too. And it's like, okay, you've done this and that. Like, I don't really need to see the video. I need to see a video of you.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I guess you alluded to little things there like Instagram, TikTok. Obviously the world's kind of open again and we don't all have time for that, but you know, things have shifted a lot in the last 4 or 5 years with social media. And what's your view on that as a tool, I guess, for creative people? And do you have to be on it? I mean, it's always a choice, but do you feel the industry is moving towards really looking at that more often than not now? What's your hot take on it?
It's interesting because I'm really half and half with that. Like, I'm a little bit old school, like, don't put anything on social media. Like, I mean, and trust, like, I have all the social media. I love social media, but it's also like my social media is not real. It looks like I wake up beautiful every day. I'm super happy. I'm on vacation every day. I mean, I'm on vacation.
You are on vacation a lot, so you could be.
I am. But you know, like, and then I see like some people and it's just like, it's a lot of negativity and complaining. And all I'm really going to say about that is like, you know, your employers, your casting directors, your producers, they will look at your social media at some point, even just to get a better impression of who you are. Like, how are you going to be on set, you know, if they don't know you and things. So I do think that social media can be an amazing tool. You know, you can make money on TikTok and Instagram and all that. I mean, it can give people an insight into who you are. But also remember that everyone has like up and down days or, you know, all that. Like, I think it's just important to really think about what you want to put out there. And then also to realize, you know, that other people's Instagrams or TikToks, whatever, are probably also not real. You know, like I'm the first one that my photos are filtered. Like I am actually on vacation a lot. I'm also like working on those vacations. So, you know, those photos and things don't tell the real story. They tell the story that I want to tell. And so I think that that's, you know, important for people. Of course, I'm not saying, you know, be super fake because there is a lot of reality in it. Like I am a very happy person, you know, like I wake up pretty happy. I choose happiness every day. But I think it's just important to be careful on what you're putting out there and what you're comfortable with putting out there. And I think the privacy is really important too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a curation tool, right? But it's not, like you say, a reflection of everything in people's lives. By the same token, I don't think there's an advocation for like renting a Lambo for a day just to pose in front, because that's like the extreme where people go a bit nuts with it. Do you find though that production companies or people are almost, for lack of a term, vetting people through social media just to kind of, even if it's just not, vetting sounds very presidential, but more like, you know, they don't know them. What are they about? What can they find just to make sure, you know, is this person an asshole? Were they not fit on my set? Do they have a belief maybe from something they've posted that I might actually not align with? And to your point there, just from an actor side, be mindful, I guess, of the message and what you're putting out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, every time that I'm about to book someone, if I don't know them, I do look them up. I Google them, just a quick Google search, especially if it's like for like a commercial and it's for a brand, they will check. And it's just the way the world is. You know, they need to know that you're not, you know, that you're not a felon, or, I mean, I'm not really sure like what.
Well, or in the case of a commercial that, you know, you've not done something for some other brand, or that you're not in every Instagram picture holding a Coke and this is a Pepsi commercial or whatever it might be.
There's things like that. Yeah. I mean, and it's just good to, it's, I mean, it's like dating shit. I mean, I Google everybody, like, and I will find you, you know.
And this leads very nicely onto your podcast, Strictly Stalking. I can see the through line now. Now that I brought that up, that is interesting because obviously it's a very different thing to what you do with casting, but I'm assuming the genesis of that was being kind of a creative with a production company of your own. That kind of just happened naturally. And I'm assuming aligned with an interest in that world?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I love podcasts. I listen to podcasts like every day, like my poor TV. Sometimes I look at it, I'm like, I should just dust you off. Like I'm just like such a podcast person. Cause then you can do so many things while you're listening to a podcast. Whereas TV, I'm all like staring into the TV. Sure. But I love podcasts so much. And I called my business partner and co-host, Jake Tuptula. I called him up and I was like, you know, everyone's doing all the good murders. Like there's no murders left. And I want to do a murder podcast and like my life sucks, you know, like whatever. And he's extremely logical and thinks things out like so much where I'm like, I'll jump in and out of things. Like I'm kind of like, woo, like, you know, like I'll buy a next day ticket to any country. Like I just go kind of like that, where he's like, he really thinks about every moment of everything and everything he says. And I, you know, I've like no filter on what I say, that kind of thing. So he's like, okay, Jamie, like your life's not over. Like we can totally have a podcast. Why don't you do stalking? Like no one's doing stalking. And I'm like, I don't even know anything about stalking. Like who's getting stalked? That's stupid. I'm not going to do that. And then like what always happens. So I go and I sit and I think, and I'm like, shit, he's right. I don't know anything about stalking. So if I don't know anything about stalking, like who else doesn't know anything about stalking except all these people are getting stalked. And where do you even turn to for help? Like you can't really call 911 and be like, yeah, someone left a mean note on my door. Like, you know, like, but once you figure out like that, it's a pattern. And I mean, stalking is so dangerous. So many people end up, you know, dead from stalking. So, it kind of turned into something else where I was like, let's do this. Like, let's create this awareness. Let's help these people. Like being hunted in for years at a time by another human being is like unfathomable. Like you don't, unless you've been through it, you don't realize the torture and the trauma that it causes. Like it's insane. So that's kind of how we started with the podcast. It started as like a whole thing. And then it turned into like, let's figure this out. Let's save lives. Let's change laws.
What's the, I mean, cause to come into that sort of cold, not knowing much about it, to then like start to unravel all of it. What's the thing that you kind of found out that surprised you the most? Cause you obviously had preconceptions like we all would of anything like that. But when you really got into it, what was the big kind of.
Yeah. Well, so the format of the show, we interview survivors of stalking.
Okay.
And I mean, I really just didn't know anything about stalking, to be honest. You know, stalking, it can last for years. We interviewed somebody that was stalked for, I think, 42 years. And it doesn't just, they don't go away. Like they're obsessed. It doesn't just like end one day. Sure, it can, but that's rare. Even if someone stops stalking you, the chances that they come back to you are so high. When they stop, it just means that they've probably moved on to someone else for a little while. Or they're in jail, or, you know, they're in, you know, locked in some form where they can't stalk you. They'll come back and keep doing it. So that was one thing where I was just like, wow, like this is a never ending thing. And then just like the lack of like laws about stalking, you know, it's hard. It's a very hard crime to prove.
I was even just going to say there's like a proof element until it gets, I guess, too far.
Yeah. Well, and if you really sit down and like look at all the aspects of it, it's not that hard to prove. Like you can see it, it's plain to say. And then they did this, and they did this, and then they did this. But you know, with the police officers and law enforcement, they're not trained for that. They're not trained to see that. So every time you go into the police or the law enforcement place, like wherever you are in the country, you're gonna have to re-explain your entire story. And you can't go in and just tell them the latest thing. You have to tell them from day one, and it's exhausting. And, you know, you can't be emotional when you do it because they're not going to listen to you in the right way. If you're emotional, like there's just so much that goes into it. So, you know, we just want to change all that. But I mean, I didn't know anything about stalking. I wouldn't have known, like, how do you get help for if you're being stalked? What do you do if you're being stalked? Like, I wouldn't have known any of that. And so, you know, just through listening to all these stories, I learned about it, and it's just so unfortunate what people go through.
It's interesting too, because I'm thinking of like you on Netflix. Have you seen the show? I know you don't watch TV. You have.
I have.
And it almost, yeah, and it's obviously very much related, but then Penn Badgley, the lead actor, I saw an interview with him, and he was saying like he found it so disconcerting that a lot of people were like liking his character because you're not supposed to. And he's like, no, you're missing the point. Like, he's not supposed to be a likable person. Look at what he does. And it's just a very telling kind of, I guess, thing in terms of culture in the West, right?
The media has always sensationalized stalking as like a romantic endeavor. Like, oh, he likes you so much, he's following you around. Like, that's insane. Or like, oh, he, you know, we broke up, but he misses me so much, he calls me every day. No, he should not be calling you every day. Like, that's not normal. That's not normal behavior. You know, and then it also, I think the media also gives people an idea that not only is that normal behavior, but to almost react in a way to get that behavior. Like, if you're answering the phone, but you've already broken up and you don't want to talk to this person, why are you answering the phone? You know, it's not up to them to like win you back. So I think in that respect, also people need to be like, you know, if it's a breakup situation, just as an example, do it, just break it up. Like, you know, you can remain friends, like everyone's different. Sure, remain friends, do this and that. But if, you know, if you're scared of this person or whatever, like, you know, it's just not a game. Like, you don't want to play games in that situation, I guess is what I'm saying. And then, you know, on a different way, media also sensationalizes like the stranger type of stalking, you know, like all those Lifetime movies are like, you know, this guy was like living in my attic and I didn't know he was there, which is actually a true story. I just interviewed a woman who a guy was living in her attic and she didn't know he was there and he was stalking her. It was
that's
crazy.
More than stalking if you're living in someone's attic, but I guess that's where the laws not existing means it's a very
I mean that he got hit with a lot of not nearly enough, but he got a couple of years in prison. It was insane. But you know, the media just, they sensationalize it to a point, you know, I mean, it's like
someone's glamorizing it in a weird way.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want the guy with the boombox standing outside their window? Right?
I don't know. Thank you. No men, no women, even a dog. If a dog was doing that, I'd still be a little like, well, first of all, how are you managing to do that without thumbs? But
right.
You know, it's a big question. How do you find your guests? Like, how do you really come?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, how do you find your guests? Cause they're obviously like,
oh,
to make them feel and to make them feel comfortable to talk about something like this must be
it's difficult. A lot of our guests remain anonymous for their safety. I mean, they're being hunted by somebody. But what's interesting about how we find our guests is like, you know, like there's usually some type of like a newspaper article, let's say. So I scour the newspapers every day, like online, you know, just look up the news and everything. And I look for keywords like stalker and whatever. And then a lot of times it won't say really much of anything about the case. Like, oh, you know, this stalker went to prison, whatever. It won't say the victim's names or anything else. So then I start researching the town. I start looking through Instagrams in that town. I start, it's many, many, many hours of research. And if they, you know, if I do have someone's name, then I have to go all the way back. I have to find their email address, their phone number, you know, which is kind of strange if you think about it, because most of these people are trying not to be found. So I'm able to find them quite quickly, most of the time. I mean, comparatively, without knowing anything about them, I can find someone from a name most of the time. So when we do find them and talk to them, you know, sometimes that's something that we talk about is how to wipe your information from the internet, because that's
as best as you can. Yeah.
Well, now that the podcast has gotten a lot more popular too, we do have people that write in and tell us their stories, but, okay. But yeah, like in the beginning, especially, and then there's a lot of people that, you know, after they went through this, they became advocates. And so those were a lot of the easier people to reach out to, because they're already talking about it. And because it is a hard thing to talk about. And a lot of people don't want to talk about it. We've had people that, you know, we'll start an interview and they can't do it, which is totally fine. You know, we'll just end it, because it's not worth it to like re-traumatize. So like, we're not trying to re-traumatize anyone. So most people need to be in a certain place in their life in order to talk about it.
But I mean, that's, you know, a really great thing to raise awareness about, because how many people won't either be aware of it until it's a bit late, or just not comfortable, or feeling like they're completely isolated. And yeah. You know, I guess it's a beauty of.
I feel like they're going crazy, you know, especially with somebody you don't know. Like the girl with the guy in her attic, she didn't know he was up there. He would come down like when she was sleeping or not at home and like steal all her underwear. It got to the point where there wasn't any underwear left in her house. Now, I think that a lot of times in that type of like trauma is like your brain does something else where like, oh, well, I must have lost it all in the laundry, you know? And also she was young and she wasn't home a lot, you know? So it was kind of like one of those things, but, and she figured it out quite quickly, but it's like, you know, you kind of become crazy, you know, sure. Your brain tells you these things are happening, but then it's like, you can't believe that. Why would everything go missing in your house? No one's in your house. You live alone. You know, I don't know how like my brain would be able to deal with that if it was happening to me.
Yeah, I guess it's survival mechanism kicks in, right? And it's like, you think it's from a movie, but it's not. But you would never imagine that you've got, what was that movie, Frogger or something, where people lived in people's houses, but they like...
Yeah, it's called frogging. It's frogging. Funny you say that. How do you know that word?
There was a movie called Frogging or Frogger or something. It's a really weird movie.
I don't know what the movie was called, but I know that Lifetime is doing a new show that actually me and my business partner are on. It comes out in March and we talk about frogging. And I actually didn't know that term until Lifetime TV told me. I think this show might be called Frogging, but I'm not sure. But yeah, it's exciting. I get to be on TV now. So
that's awesome. So is that, are you guys producing that together and then casting and doing the whole shebang, or more than that?
No, Lifetime just kind of called us and they were like, hey, do you guys want to be experts on this show?
Oh, amazing.
We're like, sure. And then we did help them get a lot of the guests that were on the show as well.
But that's off the back of the fact that you created a podcast that's about this theme. For sure. But they found you guys through that, or did you reach out to them?
Yeah, no, they found us through the podcast.
And that's how I think it's really cool, because I'm assuming that wasn't, I mean, it might have been like a nice goal that you had at the outset, or maybe not, but you can't plan for those things. But like,
I don't know what my goal was with the podcast, to be honest. It was just like, I just wanted to talk about crime. Like in the beginning, I was like, oh, I want to talk about crime too, like everyone else is. You know?
But I think bringing it back to like the acting side and sort of the sort of casting side and all that, that's just another example of, if you do your own stuff or just are creating things, whatever it is that you're passionate about, there's a weird way and a synergy of how that like eventually can lead to something else. So I guess to me, wrap things up and bring it full circle, you're clearly a creator and you make a lot of your own stuff, as well as doing things, as we said, a little outside of the box and differently. What's your view and what's your advice to actors who, you know, want to create stuff, maybe aren't creating much or not as much as they feel they should? You know, sometimes you make stuff and you don't think it's being seen or being noticed. What kind of advice can you give from someone who is casting but still a creator as well?
For actors?
Yeah.
I mean, just keep going. Like if you want it, figure out a way to do it, you know? And that's not to say that you're gonna like make it big, because not very many, you know, make it big, not very many people do. It's so unlikely that you'd be like a household name, like, you know, you're like Brad Pitt or whatever, you know, that it's unlikely. But can it happen? Yeah, it can totally happen. You know, you just keep trying, but it never happens overnight. It doesn't happen unless you're working 24 hours a day on it. I don't think a lot of people realize how hard these actors work. And on the flip side of that, you know, if you're making a living or making money from being an actor, wow, like, congrats. Like, that's so cool. Like, that's making it, I think. You know, I don't think that, I mean, I like, fame isn't really my thing or whatever. I know that there's a lot of, not a lot, but there's some actors I've talked to and they're like, oh, I just want to be famous. And like, it's going to be hard for you to make it. Like, if that's what you're looking at, you know, a lot of actors that do, you know, quote unquote, make it, it's like in them. Like it's something that they'll never stop doing, whether they're making money or not. Like they'll, it's not anything like they don't even care about being like recognized in the street. It's not anything about that. So I think that, you know, going into it for the right reasons, and just being realizing how much work it is. It's so much work. It's every single day of your life. It's, you know, you're not traveling the world and doing auditions. You're not, you know, doing all these other things and like acting on the side, which do it. Like that's totally cool too. But if this is going to be your thing, then it's like 24 hours a day. It's every day. It's, you don't get weekends off. You know, maybe there's an indie film that you could be shooting on the weekend. You know, you have to just keep working.
Yeah, I guess I saw someone talking about how there were a cinematographer, but they were saying the actors they felt when they were working with them had whatever you want to call it or whatever label you give it. It was more the fact that they clearly were A, prepared, and B, not a dick.
Oh, so much. I will hire an actor that might not be as good as another actor, but is cooler on set and people want to work with that actor every time. Because they'll keep working and they'll get it, like, you know, but you can't like work at your personality. Like if you're going to be a dick on set and be just, it's so hard when I have actors that are, you know, like they keep calling me and they need this and they need that. Like, dude, you know, we're all adults here. Like I'm not taking care of anybody, like figure it out, you know? I mean, of course you can call and ask questions. I sound like a horrible person this morning. Of course you can call and ask questions, but I'm saying like, you know, or on set, you know, they'll be super complainy, like, oh, it's too cold. It's too hot. I don't like the food. I don't like this. I don't like that. You know what? Congrats for getting there. Be grateful, you know? And of course, if there's something wrong on set, you know, speak up always. But you know, it's a personality thing. You know, are you easy to be around? Are you easy to work with? Are you nice to people? Do you say please and thank you? You know, it's little things like that that can actually make it so that you're on set more.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like you work that hard to get there and get the job and sort of, you know, put all the effort in, that enjoy it as much as you can when you have it, because you'll, you know, in a week or two or in a month or two, you'll be trying to find the next job. So why try and rush through the thing?
Work it around quick. If you act like a dick on set, then everyone will know.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah, they say that, you know, kindness doesn't go a long way in the long run, but I don't believe that for one second. I think the short term win to sort of, you know, not be nice obviously might get you a little bit of a one up in the early moments, but long term, it's kindness wins out in the end. So
every time.
Couldn't agree more. Awesome. Listen, Jamie, I like to wrap these up by stealing from Inside the Actor's Studio the 10 questions that James Lipton would ask at the end of the show, if you remember them. And if not, don't worry, I'm going to hit you with them.
Go ahead.
There you go. It's just whatever comes to mind, I guess, the instinct that you have. And the first question is, what is your favorite word?
Oh, geez. Happiness?
Okay. What's your least favorite word?
I say that word a lot. I say happiness all the time.
Then it has to be up there at the top for sure. What's your least favorite word? Unhappiness doesn't count because that's just too obvious.
Basically is my, I hate that word for some reason.
Okay. what turns you on creatively?
Motivation.
And then the flip, what turns you off?
I mean, obviously like laziness. I would say, I mean, because it's the opposite, but like entitlement.
Yeah. Fifth is optional because it's what's your favorite curse word, but I think we've sworn a few times already, so I don't feel this is a problem here.
I know, I cuss all the time. Me too. I say them all.
All of them? You're the first person that wants to claim all the swear words as their favorite.
I do. I say them all like in such a consistent basis. I mean,
that's impressive.
I probably use the word shit as like it's one of my most used words.
Okay. Well, let's go with that.
Ask me what my favorite word was. I almost said shit, but that sounds so bad. But I'm like, well, I use that word probably the most. Other than like, I say happiness all the time because I always tell people to choose happiness. Like if someone, like my friends, they get so annoyed. They're like, just stop. And I'm like, but if you choose happiness when you wake up, you'll be happy all day.
It's a lot better than choosing shit. So, you know, I feel like. Next question is, what's your favorite noise or sound? Same thing.
Oh my gosh. So my dog, he makes this sound when he yawns. It's like this, like, it's the, like, it melts me. He just makes this weird yawn sound. Like, he, it just like my whole body melts. Like, amazing. I love him so
much. You need to get a clip of that, put it on Instagram or something. So people, I can just send people to that.
I feel like, I don't know if other people would love it as much as I do, because it might be, it's kind of like a weird high pitched sound, but it's just like, oh, I love it so much.
That's just like maternal dog instinct, I think, kicking in there. What's your least favorite sound?
Oh my gosh. So I don't know if I should say this. So my neighbor, recently moved in, and she has like a child, and okay. Like,
I really wasn't sure where this was going for a second. I'm not going to lie.
No, I mean, she, like, I don't know what they're like doing over there, but like the kid must do like some amazing thing. And then like so loud, she'll go, wow. Like, so like, it's like nails on a fucking chalkboard. Like
neighbor does that or the kid does that?
Neighbor, like the kid does something and she'll go, wow, like over and over and over. Like, it's just wow, over and over and over. And it's so fucking loud. I literally, like, when she's outside, I'll run through the house and I'll shut all my doors and windows. It like makes me go insane to hear her say this so many times over and over. I'm not sure if that makes me a horrible person. Like, I don't even hear the kid crying. I just hear her. Like, you would think like, oh, because it's like a small baby kid, like a toddler or something. And so you'd think I would hear the kid, but I don't. I just hear her yelling, wow, over and over. Like, and also then I'm looking, I'm like, well, what's so fucking exciting? Like, I want to be wowed too, maybe. Like, it's so bad.
I feel for the kid. It sounds like it's going to be one of those that gets like a gold medal for everything.
Oh, yes, you know? Exactly.
Which doesn't bode well for like, you know, long-term progression.
She's kind of internet famous, my neighbor is. So her child is on
there. Oh no.
All the time.
Oh no.
So it's just a lot, because then I'll hear things and I'll watch
her. Maybe that's what it is. Is she like doing these wows to the camera for like her audience?
Yeah. I mean, I think she videotapes him like trying to do something and then like tries to get him more motivated. I don't know. Like, it's such a weird, I don't have kids, so
yeah, but you don't have to have kids to know that pimping out your toddler is probably not the most wholesome thing to do. Or maybe I'm old-fashioned too.
I mean, I wouldn't do it personally if I had it. I mean, my dog has an Instagram, but then I kind of like, I put like 5 photos up and gave up. But I probably wouldn't do it, but you know, that's her game. I don't know. But just that wow sound, it's so fucking loud. It's so loud. Like, I'll be asleep. Oh, because she gets up at like 5 a.m. I'll be asleep. And then I hear it in my sleep. And I just like, I can't, it's so much.
sounds like I know why you go on vacation now all the time. It makes a lot of sense.
Exactly.
What job or profession would you want to attempt aside from the ones you've already done or do?
Oh, wow. I want to be like one of those internet famous people that just travels and post photos. I mean, because I'm doing it now.
You're doing it
just
anyway, like, kind of.
I'm currently not doing it right because no one's paying me. But I think that would be really cool.
What you need, like, is the neighbor to wow on all of your, like, if you merge the, like, do a collab. I think that's the gateway.
I think maybe, yeah. No, or like own like a yacht company. Like, just do something like in the middle of nowhere, that kind of thing.
What job or profession would you never want to do under any circumstance?
Oh, so many. anything that involves an office. I can't go to an office. I did once for about a month or so. And I left because I would sit there And I would just stare out the window and I'm like, why am I enclosed in this like box? I can't be here anymore. So I had to quit. I cannot be locked up in an office.
Yeah. It's, I think it's one of the best tricks played on a lot of us humans all over the place to keep us sort of locked in for 8 to 10 hours a day.
I can't do it. Well, and it is like you have to be there at like a time and then like you can't leave. Like literally this, the whole, like you, they don't let you out. Like it's like being in jail, but then at the end of the week they pay you or whatever. Like I can't, it's anything that has to do with an office or being like inside a place. Like I can't do it. Like I can't do restaurants, retail, like none of that. I don't even like really being, even if I go somewhere, I don't go shopping anymore. Like I don't like being enclosed in places like that. It's just, I need to see like the air outside.
Just to make sure it's not the Truman Show and that this whole thing is still kind of real.
Yeah. I know. I've just, that's always been like, my parents have always been like, well, what are you going to do when you grow up? I'm like, just not be in an office, you know? And I'm still like, as long as I'm not in an office, like I made it, like I'm good.
I mean, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world to aim for, to be fair. At least it's healthier from a mental perspective.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, I think the pandemic showed that too. Like so many people that work in offices, like they don't need to, and they're happier. Not everybody. Some people love that shit. I don't know.
So some people love it because they feel like that's their sort of community and they kind of want that connection. And I do get that. And I think there's benefits to seeing people in person, but I think the idea that you have to be seen to be doing work and you have to be like there for 10 hours a day when you could do it in 3 and then have more freedom. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. Final question is a bit more ethereal, but it's, when it's all said and done, what would you like the story of your life to be?
Oh gosh. You know, I would have probably answered that a lot differently before the podcast. But now like I want to change things. Like I want to make like a real change in like the laws. Like some small changes in the laws could save so many lives. So many people, not just getting killed by like their stalkers, you know, or also like we deal a lot with domestic violence. The two often go hand in hand. And you know, so many people, it's just so sad. So I guess for me, like if I can change one life, if I can save one person from everything that I'm doing, then I made it. Like, that's what I want people to remember. Like, I want people to be like, oh yeah, like she changed all these laws and now stalking is totally illegal. You know, like in Ireland, there's not a single law against stalking. Mm. You can stalk people all you want. So we're working on changing that, you know, like, we've met some amazing people over in Ireland that are changing those laws. You know, I think that that's what I want. And not to be like, oh, she did this, but like, you know, just that would be my story. Like able to change those laws and save people.
Well, it's a bit of a legacy, right? That's improving people's lives. Yeah. So that's amazing. No, this has been a blast. Jamie, final moments to you. I kind of always pass it over to the guest. If you want to let people know where they can check out the podcast or connect with you on the socials if you want them to, or if they want to. And then I guess, yeah, at the end of it, any kind of, you know, final thoughts from you, or if you were going to sort of wrap this up with the main theme of, you know, the chat today that you want people to be left with, what would that be?
Oh gosh. Cool. So my podcast is called Strictly Stalking. You can find it everywhere that you would listen to podcasts. The podcast Instagram is Strictly Stalking Pod. My personal Instagram is Feathergirl77, because that is the year I was born. I'm 44. People always are like, why 77? I'm like, because I'm not old.
So can people not put two and two together to understand what the, like, the kind of stuff is? Like,
yeah. People are like, oh, is that your favorite number? I mean, sure, but I'm just that old. And then I guess like, I mean, my, you know what, my main theme, like I said, it's choose happiness. Like I went through like a really terrible 6-year relationship, which thankfully ended right before the pandemic. And so when that ended, I just started waking up every day, like I'm going to choose happiness. Like I can choose to be upset that this ended, even though like it's not really even wasn't, you know, when anything ends, it's upsetting, I guess. I was more upset that I just wasted time in my life, to be honest. But I started waking up like, I'm just gonna choose to be happy. Like it's such an easy choice when you are able to think about it in that way. Like you can wake up and be like, oh man, I'm out of coffee, like, you know, this went wrong and this, or you can be like, I'm out of coffee, I'm gonna go to the coffee store, like maybe I'll meet someone cool, like maybe my friend will be there, you know, like there, you just turn it around. And it's so easy, like in the way that you speak to yourself. If you speak, if you can turn around and speak to yourself positively, it'll change your entire life. Like it really will. I used to be so unhappy. I mean, I was in a really bad relationship. That's why I was unhappy, right? But if I had woken up and chosen happiness years before, I would have left him years before. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of my whole theme for life, is like just, you know, choosing the happiness, choosing the positivity, and the way that I speak to myself. I am super all about myself. Like, you know, like I can be like, oh my, I could wake up and be like, wow, my hair looks like shit today. I could wake up and be like, ah, I'm gonna do a ponytail today. You know, like, yeah, sure, it looks like shit. But if I tell myself that, then that's so negative. If I wake up and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna do a really cool looking ponytail. And I mean, and that's like the least like low level shit, you know, what people say to themselves. But every time you say something negative to yourself, it like checks a little, it takes a little thing off, like it's not good, you know? So if you just turn it around, if you think for 2 seconds and start turning it around, it becomes something that you can do so easily all the time.
Yeah. And I think in an industry like ours, where at least from an actor's point of view, everything on the surface can seem like it's all external validation and this person has the power, which is all, you know, just a construct of the mind anyway, then to reframe into the mindset part is one of the biggest parts, if not the biggest part of whatever you're doing in life. But, you know, with what we do as creatives, I think it's key. So I love that you said
and
that.
And I used to think it was so, my mom used to tell me things like that when I was a kid. I'd be like, I don't, whatever, you know, no one listens to their parents. Right. Yeah. But then it, and you can hear it in other people. So I can hear it in other people all the time now. Like my girlfriend be like, oh, I'm so stupid, I did this. And I'll stop her and be like, but you're not stupid, you just learned a lesson, so you're smart. Like, there you go. Like, do not tell yourself you're stupid. Like, I can't, like, I mean, because, you know, especially like things like, I'm so dumb, I did this wrong. You know, my ex used to say, to tell me all the time that I was dumb or stupid. And so I was like, okay. And so when I started choosing happiness, I realized that I would tell myself that all the time and I would hear his voice. I'd be like, oh yeah, you did this wrong, you're stupid. And so then it changed into like, guess what you did right today? You know, like you can change it so easily. Like if I can change it, everyone can change it. Just choose the happiness.